I'm Gail Wilson, the Digital Communications Coordinator at Overseas Development Institute, and today I'm joined by my colleagues Jonathan Tanner, Media and Public Affairs Officer, and Nick Scott, the Digital Manager. And we have with us today Jim Rosenberg, who's the Head of Online and Social Media at the World Bank. And today we're going to discuss the use of social media channels in development and research communications. To kick off discussion, I'd like to start by asking you each to introduce yourselves and give us a quick overview of why you and your organisation consider social media to be important to your work in development communications. So, Jim, if you'd like to kick us off.
Sure, I'm Jim Rosenberg. I'm the head of online and social media at the World Bank based in Washington, D.C. And we're basically using social media not just to share widely the work that we're doing and the research and knowledge that our staff are working on, but also to engage and be more effective listeners. We've used social media extensively over the past couple of years to really reach out to a new audience that's coming online for the first time, typically through social media in developing countries.
I'm Nick Scott. I'm the digital manager here at ODI. I think at ODI, we use social media as a way of amplifying the voice of researchers, but also helping researchers and their research be found. It's very easy to publish and then move on and forget about a piece of research and for people to miss out on some of the important findings that are in our research. So social media is one way to make sure that it reaches people within their daily lives, within the streams of information that they are receiving on a daily basis.
I'm Jonathan Tanner. I'm the Media and Public Affairs Officer here at ODI. I think one of the most important aspects of social media for the media role in general is the ability of organisations like ODI to apply their research to issues that people are already talking about. So in the way that Nick says we need to go where people are, Twitter is a really good example of a way that you can talk about issues that people are already engaging in, already wanting to know more about in real time. So being able to tap into those conversations is a real asset for us.
And one of the challenges faced at ODI, and I assume also the World Bank, is how to persuade research-orientated staff the merits of condensing their work for different social media platforms. Can you describe how you're managing to meet that challenge?
Well, the challenge of having staff or researchers distill down their work is made easier by the fact that we work with colleagues who tend to be very oriented towards data-driven decision-making. And so if we're able to show them data or able to show them metrics that people are interacting with their content or their ideas, and they're able to use these tools to actually get feedback on an idea they're working on or a piece of research they're working on, that helps very much. The other thing, too, is when people take on these tools and use them in their research, and then that helps them get even more awareness. That has kind of a knock-on effect, and I would say almost, you know, a benevolent jealousy effect that people really do want to be part of that.
One of the things that I think is really important about Twitter, and particularly getting across to people who might be a bit skeptical about its potential, is to say, imagine being the editor of your own newspaper, being in charge of which staff are going out and getting stories for you and telling you what is the most information of the day, being able to then scan those headlines and decide, like any reader of any newspaper does, they read the headline and they think, shall I engage with the full article? And what Twitter does is puts you in a position to be able to collate your own information from the people that you already think are particularly interesting and important. And in the kind of peer relationships that researchers have, the ability to create a self-selecting community around particular issues can actually be really important to them and their work and their information gathering potential.
So if you're successful in encouraging researchers to take on these social media tools, you're opening up social media across the organisation. Is there a danger that you might start to lose control of branding and message? We don't want to crush creativity, so what's your advice on how to deal with this sort of risk?
Well, I think the illusion of control is just that. I think it's an illusion because we're in a world today where any online content is picked up in search engines. It's referred by word of mouth. It's referred by social media. So what's on the homepage of an organization may look the same to a Google algorithm that a buried blog post does by a researcher. So the way to get around that is really to have, at least in our experience, it's been to have clear policies and guidelines and trying to create social media tools that are accessible and easy to use for people who may not naturally be digitally oriented or may not naturally be communicators.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the importance of guidelines, the importance of setting different rules around different channels and different parts of different channels is quite essential. I would encourage our researchers to engage through social media, but I also encourage our audience to engage through social media. I'm never going to have control over the audience and what the audience is saying about ODI. So I have to trust the researchers just in the same way as I trust the audiences that we're speaking to know what they're talking about, to have useful and important insights. And quite often it's much more powerful and much better for both for networking but also for learning that we have a completely open way of describing and discussing situations and discussing our work than if we tried to lock things down. And actually we would lose some of the quality of our research if we tried to do that, I feel.
One thing I would add to that, and Nick's right there, is of course there is perhaps a corporate risk that people in our sort of position have to consider, but Twitter in a sense has a slightly built-in safety mechanism on this. And that's not to say that it's a catch-all, but people are very explicit in their bios that their views are their own. And that's something which is almost standard across Twitter. And of course you can never quite separate out somebody's view from their employer, but where there is that disclaimer, I think that's a reason why it is okay to encourage them to get stuck into debate and share their ideas, because as Nick says, you've got to trust people to come back and meet you halfway and engage with those ideas.
Just picking up on that point, one thing that we talk about a lot is it's important for people to think of social media as a way to engage around their community of practice or the work that they do or the area that they're active in, but not to make statements on behalf of the organization. What's great, I think, is we have some bloggers at the World Bank who have been really good about, from a data-driven approach, saying what they think that may be a bit divergent sometimes from what the bank says about something, but they do it in a way that it's okay, because they're kind of saying, this is my opinion as a researcher, and I'm not trying to speak for the organization or discredit the organization. I just have an academic difference of opinion, and that's okay.
Something that's becoming increasingly important to our everyday work is to demonstrate impact, and this is quite difficult to do with social media channels. How can we effectively measure the impact of social media, and is it possible to show that we're really extending our communications reach in a way that makes a difference to people's behaviour?
I'm always leery of the word impact, because I think it can mean different things to different people. So I would interpret the question this way. I would say that we know for sure that we're reaching people through social media that we were not reaching a couple of years ago. We know that because of their age demographic. We know that because of where they live. So that clearly, I think, is helping broaden the conversation in terms of awareness of development issues, certainly awareness of the work that we do. It's also bringing the voices of those people directly into the boardroom of the World Bank, at least giving us the opportunity to share what people are saying and thinking about things. So to me, that's kind of effect or impact. What I think is more challenging is to look at over time, how do these tools actually affect development outcomes? And I think that kind of causality is difficult.
I've spent a lot of time working on ways in which we can measure reach and measure various aspects in addition to reach that might give you some indicators of success. They don't give you indicators of impact, and I think you have to be fairly pragmatic. I think there's a lot of dangerous talk in some ways about impact, and we need to have a more pragmatic way of seeing impact. If you're doing the right things and you have all of the indicators in place that you believe are the indicators that show real reach, that show real change in people's minds, then that is probably as far as you can get without a big research project. And you can always, you know, we're researchers, we could run a research project on whether we achieved actual impact. But what we can do as communicators is try and pick up all of the indicators before that, all of the sort of the steps on that road to impact. And I think impact is a much bigger thing than actually you can measure in a dashboard or in a metric. It's about real understanding of the context, the situation, who else was involved, and so on. So all I would look for is trying to find those steps first and understand those steps.
And my last question, is there a tension between online and social media and other traditional forms of media? And would you say one is replacing the other?
I wouldn't say that online media is replacing traditional media. I think media is converging, but a good day for us on Twitter is a story in Reuters or an op-ed in an important financial newspaper. That gives us a really good day in social media, as much as it gives us something to engage around and to talk about. There was a time when people talked about electric typewriters and manual typewriters, and then it just became the typewriter. And so with social media, my sense is eventually these things are all going to blur together. I should also, as a side note, I'm quite active with the Columbia Journalism School in New York. I'm on the alumni board, and they're not only teaching students there how to use open data, but they're teaching them how to pitch to venture capitalists, and they're teaching them how to code. And that's becoming a core skill set for journalism. So I see there's a lot of convergence. I think there's plenty of opportunity in the future, but it's definitely changing fast.
And I think Jim's right to talk about the importance of the agenda. It's clear that organisations are more capable than they ever have been before of producing their own media and multimedia outputs and contacting your audience directly. But as I was saying earlier on, Twitter is often a self-selecting community. And so you may reach your audience directly, but it's an audience who is already thinking, I want to listen to what we have to say. What the traditional media still has the power to do is set the agenda. If you think of social media and Twitter as what people are talking about, they tend to be talking about what they read in the paper this morning, or actually, you know, maybe what they saw on the website this morning, but however they consumed it, it is still the big beasts of the world of journalism that set the news agenda. No amount of creative production of multimedia can replace that. You might have a good day within your own online community, but if you want to reach a bigger audience, then you've still got to be thinking about traditional media as well. It's not to say that the two don't feed off each other in a way that is a mutually reinforcing relationship. I know journalists find Twitter very useful for building stories and finding stories, but I think it's still clear who sets the agenda, and I don't think that will change just yet.
Just on that point, with any type of outreach, you're looking at who are you trying to reach or to influence. And at the end of the day, a media organization is another set of influencers. And so in that sense, the flattening out of communication, which social media and other tools have enabled, in some ways makes traditional media outlets even more important. And I think that might be counterintuitive, but I think that'll play out.
Thank you for listening to this ODI podcast. For more resources and downloads from ODI, please visit our website at www.odi.org.uk.